I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Charles Christian with us, an English barrister and Reuters correspondent turned writer, podcaster, award-winning tech journalist, and sometimes werewolf hunter. He now writes and talks mainly about folklore, urban myths, history, and the strange and weird. And yes, an English Fleet Street newspaper once did commission him to go on a werewolf hunt on the night of a full moon. He didn't find one. Charles, I'm glad you didn't. That could have been a strange meeting up with a werewolf.
It could indeed, yes. A slightly bizarre thing. I was rather hoping that it was just a very large dog, but in the back of my mind, there was this thought.
Well, welcome to the program. Welcome to the United States. You're being heard on 650 stations all over the country and in North America, so we'll have some fun with you tonight.
Thank you very much for inviting me on, George.
And how are things in England these days with COVID?
Well, we're heading towards supposed Freedom Day on Monday when all the regulations go away, and I think everybody's in trepidation because the Delta variant is surging. So we're wondering how long it will be before there's a U-turn and it's back to masks and lockdown again.
Los Angeles County has just mandated, effective Saturday, masks go back on again when you go inside, and they want them for vaccinated or unvaccinated people. Strange thing.
Yep. Yeah, and it's spreading across Europe, continental Europe as well, and number of countries over there who've eased off the rules have now reimposed them, so we'll wait to see.
Tell me about your early career. How did it all start?
How did it all start? Well, as you mentioned in the beginning, I was a barrister in London. Those are the...
Which is a lawyer in this country.
Those are the lawyers who wear the wigs and gowns. And I then moved on into journalism, but I'd always had this interest in the occult and folklore and legends and weird stories. I think that was really from childhood. You know, I grew up at a time when television wasn't as pervasive as it is today, and in winter evenings we'd all sit around an open coal fire and my parents would tell stories and ghost stories and spooky stories, and I lived in a distinctly spooky house.
Oh, you did? Did somebody pass on in the house, or what happened?
Well, it's a very old house on the seafront in Yorkshire coastal town called Scarborough, and it had been built up and built on over the centuries as the seafront had receded and they'd built wharves and things, and so they extended the house. And it had strange lofts on the in the roof area, which had been used as a shelter for shipwrecked mariners to take them in there. And some had passed away there, and a psychic friend of my mother's said she could definitely hear the sound of seamen in their large boots marching around on the floorboards.
Wow.
Which was very cheery for me as a child because I slept immediately below it.
That's right. That is a spooky house.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there were odd bits because it had been sublet and split and then rejoined. So the interior really didn't make a lot of sense. And there were passages that just went down into the ground and then stopped for no apparent reason. And there was, I always remember there was a staircase that was hinged and swung open to reveal another cellar beneath it. And it was very spooky. And when the wind blew, the house used to shake in a rather spooky way, and it was as if someone was grabbing the bottom of my bed. You know, I'm talking here, I'm a, you know, child of five or six, and just giving the bed a shake. And
which is horrible for a little youngster to go through.
It was indeed, it was indeed. And I say, I think with hindsight, and the, you know, as you grow up and you know more about psychology, I think my parents were probably a little bit dysfunctional, and they used to give me very weird advice. And my father once told a tale of when I was out on the rock pools, there was a shoreline there with a beach, and at low tide there were lots of rock pools. He always said, always take a knife with you. And I said, why for? And he said, well, a friend of his, was when he was at school, was dabbling in a rock pool, and his hand was gripped by a conger eel, and he couldn't get the conger eel off, and the tide came up, and he was still trapped there and drowned.
Oh, my God.
And so I said, so the idea of the knife is that you stab the conger eel? And he said, no, the idea of the knife is that you cut your hand off. And I think he was serious about
it. He probably was, yeah.
And you know, later life, when I tell it to people, they say...
Well, what would you do, drown or cut
your
hand off?
No wonder you're weird, Charles, yeah.
Two horrible choices here.
Exactly, exactly. And I say, I think some of those things reflected on me. And what really got my interest, because it was at the time when... it sounds like ancient history, but in the 1950s, cars were starting to become available, modern cars as opposed to,
sure,
you know, pre-war cars and things. And a big thing everybody did was go out on a Sunday afternoon for a drive in the country. And one day we were returning home and we went past a particularly derelict property. And... my mother mentioned, she said, that during the war, this is the Second World War we're talking about, women in the Royal Army Service Corps, they were the people who drove munition lorries and supply lorries for the army so that the men could be on frontline duty and the women were sort of, you know, working in the homeland. They were given special permission to detour past this house and take a long way round rather than go the short way because it had a reputation for being haunted, and it was thought it would be wrong to send a woman on her own in a truck past this haunted house at night. And that struck me as odd because, you know, there was a war on and fuel was short in short supply. That's what all the Atlantic convoys were about. And yet, here was somebody in the military saying, yep, we take this ghost thing so seriously, we're allowing you to use extra fuel and go the long way home. So I say, that triggered my interest, and it was a story that really prompted me in later life to investigate this particular area of land where this tale had been told, and to collect together lots of other ghost stories from around that area and weird stories.
Oh my gosh, you've got more than a dozen stories we're going to go through. How did you collect them all?
Well, some of it was word of mouth. Some of it was sort of old folklore. And some of it was just research. And you look up one place and you look for one thing, and then you sort of see a little footnote somewhere and you see a reference in another book. And as the time goes on, you just collect them all and then you can link them together. And so it went on. And I collected for a book called The Wold Newton Triangle, which is all about this particular area of England in East Yorkshire. And that came out about 5 years ago as an e-book. There is a print one coming soon. And then more recently, I've done one on the area where I live now, which is in South Norfolk, which is anybody who was in the, who had parents in the American Air Force during World War II will be familiar with East Anglia, because it's the
bit
that sticks out. Absolutely. And is closest to Europe, and so it was full of American air bases. And
is that the book called Shuckland?
Shuckland, yes, indeed. And that's about this particular area of East Anglia. And again, it was, I'd heard a few stories and picked up a few stories, and I'm always intrigued to find where the stories come from and what the origins is of them is, and that's one of the things I find fascinating.
I'm gonna let you, Charles, pick a few of your favorite stories and just tell them to us.
Okay. Well, I mean, to say one of the things, obviously, when you're talking about these times, many of the stories began several hundred years ago when people weren't educated and science wasn't so strong, and so
and they didn't have media and TV and social network.
Exactly. And stories would spread and no one really had any way of debunking them or proving them, and so they took on a bit of a life of their own. There's one I particularly like, and it's one of the key stories in my first book, The Weird Worlds book, and it was the one that later led to The Werewolf Hunter. That was just 5 years ago, and it's of a werewolf called Old Stinker, because the werewolf's breath was apparently so vile and putrid from eating carrion.
Jeez.
And this werewolf, it's intriguing because werewolves aren't a natural part of English folklore. They have them in Europe, they have them in North America, they have them in other parts of the world, but they're not really an English tradition. But there was one, and it was just a few miles from my hometown where I grew up. And it was said to lurk during the Middle Ages, you know, 1,000 years ago, and it took the form of a human who would go around market towns and spot which travelers were heading along a particularly lonely road at the end of the day, and then transform into a wolf and seize them and eat them. Now, there were actually wolves in this part of the world at that time, and it was such a bad problem with wolves, particularly in winter when they'd come down from the high ground and start scavenging in the lowland, that a hostel was built there in the 10th century, specifically to provide travelers shelter from the night and so that they weren't eaten by wolves. So there was this element of it, but also then we come to 1066 and all that with the Battle of Hastings. But before the Battle of Hastings, there was the Battle of Stamford Bridge, when the Vikings came over and had one last attempt to invade England, and there was a huge big battle there. And these Vikings landed on the coast just near where this werewolf was said to lurk, and the army marched inland. And a feature of the Vikings, as anybody who's seen the television series will know, they featured berserkers, people who thought they were imbued with the spirit of wild animals, and some of them would wear a bear skin around them and little armor, and others would wear wolf skins around them and little armor. And I just find it a coincidence that there's an area where there's tales of wolf predation, where there's also tales of werewolf, and where in 1066 an army of Vikings clad in wolf skins came marching through. Now, you know, you imagine you're a peasant lying in a barn hoping the Vikings won't come and kill you.
Right.
And you see these blood-splattered Vikings wearing wolf skins going past.
Scares the living daylights out of you.
Well, it scares the living daylights out of you. And you'd think, are these wolves that are men, or are these men that are wolves? And of course, that's really where you have the werewolf from. So, you know, it's just intriguing that there's these strands linking it all together, and that the later folklore legend spreads of this werewolf, but it may be a combination of the Vikings and the Viking heritage and the actual wolves that used to be in that area.
Is the legend of werewolf still strong in that area?
It got a revival. There were, there have been later sightings. There were sort of the tales of stagecoaches back in the sort of 18th century being attacked by wolves. And there was even in the 1960s a tale of a lorry driver, truck driver, who had his vehicle attacked by a large wolf-like creature, but he was able to drive on and leave it. But he described seeing it in the distance, and first of all saw these two red eyes, but he thought they were actually the taillights of a car, and it was only later he realized it was a giant wolf. And then we had the revival a few years ago, which is when I got involved with the werewolf hunt, where there were reports of a giant wolf-like creature lurking in a nearby town just to the south of this area I'm talking about.
And these people who reported this, they were darn serious, weren't they, Charles?
They were completely serious, yes. And the area where they were reporting them was in quite a spooky part of the town, with an old canal running through it and lots of derelict buildings. And the right, because of industrial waste and things, the canal always had a bad reputation because people had fallen in it and drowned and you know, had steep banks and weren't able to get out. They always had a bad reputation. And when the weather was in the right way, it would be very foggy and misty. And the wolf had been seen, this creature had been seen prowling around there. And there were tales of people seeing it attacking other dogs and dragging them away. And it was thought that it was something more than an actual wolf, that it may have been the werewolf. And I was contacted by a newspaper and rather jokingly, I said it sounded like old Stinker had come back from the undead and was haunting the area again.
And he might have.
And,
he might have.
And he might have, indeed. He might have, indeed. And it then sort of took off and became, you know, an internet 15-minute wonder. And there were masses of stories and newspaper coverage on it, and in the UK and continental Europe, and on radio shows and things. So it was very popular. Anyway, one newspaper contacted me and said, you know, as you wrote the story, the original story about Old Stinker, would you like to go on a werewolf hunt? And I said, of course, and dragged my wife along with me.
My gosh.
So this one did.
Thank God you didn't find one.
Exactly.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death, we all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.